Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Corner kick. Celtic couldn't handle Wood at the set piece. It's a brilliant header. A tail goes to Spectacular. What about that? What about that? Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
He's
scored.
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Yes, hello again and welcome along for your weekly dose of Shim, Spider and so much more. And since we last met, talks over the CBA between the A-League clubs and the PFA have seemingly hit a roadblock. The new English Premier League season has kicked off and Alessandro Diamanti was named the Johnny Warren medalist for the A-League season just gone. A little later on in the show, we've got national team coach Graham Arnold here in the studio as our special guest. But closer to home, last week we brought you the inside story on Spider's big move to Greece. This week it's Maury who's making the headlines here in Australia after being appointed as the new head of football operations for the Canberra A-League bid team. So let's get straight into it. Maury, how did all this come about and what is your new role?
Yeah, mate, look, obviously with Spider's big news in the last week, I didn't want to miss out on the opportunity. So, I've been having regular conversations with Ron Smith and Michael Caggiano, who's the director. Ron Smith is someone that is obviously been heavily involved in this bid process to oversee the whole of football. And my discussions and kind of what the conclusion that we've come to is to support Ron Smith in putting the full football infrastructure in place for this football club, if accepted.
So is this a full-time role, Maury?
It will be. It will be, Simon. At the moment, it's obviously in the early stages. So in heavily dialogue with James Johnson at the FFA, but hoping to get approval and be live and operational from January.
Is that you moving to Canberra, Maury?
Mate, I'm still on the flight back to UK tomorrow, Spider, because it's still very quiet, as you know, here in Australia. And to be placed in Europe for business opportunities, we all agree, is still a far better fit at this moment in time.
Oh, brilliant. Well, mate, good luck with the buds. That's great to hear.
Maury, there is no official expansion process underway. So as far as you're aware, what is the state of play for Canberra? We know that they made a bit of noise in the media a week or two back. A lot of speculation that they might be in season 21-22. What do you know?
Well, what I know, like I said, is that the directors at Canberra are in heavy discussions with James Johnson and that hopefully the FFA are able to make a decision come January whether or not Canberra will be a team that is accepted. I mean, look, this is a ready-made team with the facilities and more importantly, Simon, local government support of to the tune of 1.5 million. So I think in the 15-year A-League history, I don't think there has been a club with that kind of support.
Are other A-League clubs supportive?
Yeah. I mean, again, why would you not be supportive of investment in Australian football at this moment in time? And like I said, it's able to tap into government and bring something different, immediate stability. And, you know, personally, I've got a bit of a soft spot for Canberra coming through the AIS, and extremely passionate, like everybody to do with Canberra, are about providing some really good opportunities for young youth and the pathways and all these kind of things. So, look, there hasn't been any heavy suggestions to not want to go down the path of a Canberra from other clubs, and hopefully we'll get the right decision.
Okay, we shall watch that situation with interest. Spider, sorry to keep you waiting over there in Greece. We know you got up early to speak to us. What's the situation over there with Xanti and the appeal to stay in the Super League? I see was rejected. There is some talk of going to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. I don't know if you're across any of this. How's it all going over there?
It's a lot of information, big Spider-Man first thing in the morning. But look. As far as we know, we're playing second division. So there's no two ways about it. We're putting a team together at the moment to win the second division and go back up into the Super League. Now, it is Greece, so anything is possible. We don't want to go to courts. We don't want to be waiting another 6 weeks before we start playing. So as far as we know, we're playing second division, mate. We move on. At the moment, we've got 8 players. We're filtering through it all. We started off with about 33, Maury. We're down to about 8 that Popper actually considers first team players at the moment. So it's still a process. And you know what it's like here in Europe. Everyone waits the last minute before they decide if they want to come or they don't want to come. So it's going to be quite an interesting process in the next 2 weeks, I think.
Spider, through the packing process for me here, I found a pair of boots, mate. Any chance of a look in?
Oh, come on, Big Josh. We need to stop it, mate. Let me tell you, after your body check against Olympiacos in my last game in Greece, mate, I don't know if you're welcome back here.
Mate, it only took me 5 minutes as well.
After the hour and a half of riots before the game kicked off.
Is there any goalkeepers for you to coach, Spider, amongst that 8?
Mate. If I tell you truthfully, hopefully this doesn't go out to Greece. I've got 5 at the moment and I don't think any of them will be playing. So we're looking for keepers, son.
Get the gloves on, Maury. Okay, let's get into our opening segment, which is Simon Says.
Simon Says.
Now, one of the most perplexing stories of late concerns the Charles Perkins Academy, the initiative aimed at providing better pathways for Indigenous footballers and named after one of the pioneers of our game and championed by A-League New Boys, MacArthur FC. Now, according to FTBL this week, and indeed Football Today as long ago as last month, after less than a year in operation, the Academy chair, Professor John Maynard, announced it had closed its doors. Maynard cited the change in ownership at MacArthur along with the COVID-19 pandemic as the primary reasons. The board resigned in April. Yet MacArthur dispute that version. They say that the academy remains operational and that the previous board wanted to make it an Australia-wide program and not a local one, which is their preference. Frank Farina, one of the few Indigenous male players to represent Australia, is the director of football at the academy. His contract was reported as being due to finish in April. Yet Farina confirmed to me over the weekend that he is still on the payroll with MacArthur and that the club still has plans to work with Indigenous kids, particularly in conjunction with other A-League clubs. The Charles Perkins family, who say they are completely in the dark as to whether the academy is an ongoing concern or not, have, on the advice of the now departed board, requested the name of their late father be removed from the academy. MacArthur say they've offered the name as a trademark back to the family. As of today, the name and logo still appears on the MacArthur FC website and the Academy website remains active, yet its Twitter account isn't. A quick check on ASIC confirms the Academy was registered to MacArthur FC on the 28th of February this year. Now, I've spoken to all sides in this story, and as is often the case with the game in this country, you can speak to 10 or even 20 people to try and get to the truth and end up more confused than you were at the start. This story is no different. Whoever is in the right and whoever's in the wrong, what is disappointing is that politics could impact upon a very real need within the game. There is a distinct lack of Indigenous players in the A-League in particular. I emceed the launch of MacArthur FC last year and was particularly impressed by their commitment to Indigenous youngsters. Indeed, there was even some talk at one stage of them adopting an Indigenous name for the club. That commitment may well still be there. They say it is. But 12 months on, and the Academy's future is a little unclear. This is not just MacArthur's issue, but a football one. There is so much untapped Indigenous talent in this country, yet other sports like AFL and Rugby League continue to hoover most of it up. Some of that is down to money. Those sports are better funded than ours, and our lack of clout within the halls of political power also contributes. There are signs, particularly with the FIFA Women's World Cup coming here in 2023, that is changing. That's great. But what isn't changing anytime soon is the politics that bedevils the game of football. And the name of a great Indigenous footballer and activist is right in the middle of this one. I wonder what would Charles Perkins make of it all? I'm reminded of the late journalist Andrew Detre's fantastic quote, which sums everything up. This sad tribal compound in which soccer exists accommodates genuine zealots, verified madmen, innocent idealists, mercenary opportunists, egomaniacs, loudmouth dilettantes, pro and anti-ethnics, a few con men, and a fairly large number of amazed bystanders. For promising Indigenous footballers, many marginalised by geographical separation, financial hardship, and let's be honest, probably still, even in 2020, a fair dollop of racism, this is not just irritating, it's a tragedy. Let's hope the Charles Perkins Academy, or whatever it might be called, can survive, the politics be put aside, and the focus be put back on what really matters, and that's the game of football. Let's move on to Hard Talk.
Hard Talk.
Now, Hard Talk is brought to you by Streamgate, which has been live streaming since 2008, specializing in custom-built stream pages, pay-per-view, and multi-language streaming. They can cater to large online conferences with multiple simultaneous streams and destinations, including all social media channels, servicing clients right around Australia. Go to streamgate.com.au or find them on Instagram. Well, the CBA continues to be the biggest issue affecting the game at the moment. I touched upon this last week, so we won't go in depth this week, but safe to say that Tuesday, maybe even before then, is an important day for the A-League. That is the day that players are due to be paid, but the standoff regarding any future collective agreement continues. The clubs want to implement pay cuts of up to 30%, while the PFA is standing firm and has suggested staggering cuts over a period of 3 years, or even a cap for a year, which leaves clubs and players free to negotiate individually while the game works its way through the hardship of COVID and prepares for a new broadcast deal, or indeed, of course, to go it alone. Maury, let's start with you on this one. Where does this land? Because ultimately, I guess, there simply has to be some sort of an agreement.
Yeah, there has to be, Simon, but I just think it's ludicrous that players are waiting to see whether they get paid on Tuesday. For me, I just can't wrap my head around that. I know that there's three clubs that have said that they will commit to paying the players' salaries, Victory, Sydney FC and Melbourne City. But my issue here is a lack of leadership. For me, when you're going through tough times and tough decisions need to be made, unfortunately, you need to be front and centre. You look at proactive behaviour, Simon, and proactive behaviour was when the Golden Generation partnered with a strategy with the FFA that turned a $10 million broadcast deal into $32 million. That's what happens when you have strategy and you're proactive. For me, this waiting game of who's going to take the lead, who's going to decide, once again, it just drags the game through the mud.
So who takes the lead, Maury? Who do you want to take the lead here?
I want the FFA to take control.
Spider.
Yeah, look, I think it's clear as day that the FFA needs to take control. I'm a little bit lost with it all, guys, to be fair. And a little bit like what Maury said. Why are these players waiting to see if they get paid on Tuesday to see what's going to happen?
They should know.
Yeah, of course they should know. And I heard it was last Friday, Maury. And then obviously they had the weekend, Saturday, Sunday. Now we're into Monday. Now is it going to happen Tuesday? So then what happens on Tuesday morning? The players don't get paid. What, everyone's free? How's it work, Maury?
It's a good question, Spider. And that's the uncertainty. And look, we're not silly enough to know that for the odd player, you know, mutual termination or being a free agent is going to be a real positive.
Yes.
But let's not forget, for the majority of these players, this is real turmoil and uncertainty around about the future of their livelihood. So, unfortunately, we don't have the answers, but I just think it's crazy that we're at this situation because, Simon, you touched on it last week. I've been talking about it for 4 months.
Let me play devil's advocate just for a moment here. James Johnson, to be fair to him, has indicated in an interview he did with Mick Lynch in The Age over the weekend that if the two factions continue to war without an end in sight, then he will step in. But I want to ask you, you know, that the clubs have been pushing for independence for a long time. That still hasn't officially happened. We know that. But but we are moving towards it very, very slowly, but we're moving towards it. If the clubs are going to be independent and run their own show, then this is on them and the players to sort it out between them, isn't it? I mean, the FFA are not going to be in control of the league. And I think
they still have 20%, Simon, but they still have 20% of whatever.
But it's not the majority, is it?
No, it's not. But the overall governing body of the game, to make sure that the game has a future, to make sure that there is not all of this uncertainty. For me, I'm not waiting to see what happens.
But is that not a cop out by the clubs and the players to a lesser extent? But certainly the clubs, that every time there is an issue that can't be resolved, you know, they have to go running to the FFA and ask James Johnson or whoever it is to sort the problem out.
You know, look, it's certainly not a great start in what the new independence can look like. But because it is the beginning. And I stress because it's the beginning, I would be getting in there ASAP if I'm the FFA and making sure that there is certainty behind our game.
A little bit with the independents as well, guys, is who is the independents? Like, I mean, we know Melbourne Victory can take care of himself. We know Western Sydney. We know Sydney FC, Western United. But, you know, can Perth, with all the turmoil that's happened there, can Brisbane, can Central Coast? Where's Newcastle's situation? So,
but it's a collective. It's a collective spider. It's a collective spider. I mean, it's you know, an independent league means that all the clubs are working together. There is one.
Yeah, no, I agree. But with the turmoil that all these clubs have with the ownership, and that it'd come down to the ownership, wouldn't it? The people who own the club, they're the ones who have got to put the money in. So they'd have a big say in it. And at the moment, we've got four or five clubs that probably financially aren't in great situations because of COVID. So where is the independence? Like, even as an owner, I'd be scared at the moment.
But that's what they push for. They push for it, you know, for 2-3 years ago and ousted the old boards. And that was their strong desire. And here we are 2-3 years later and it still hasn't happened. Anyway, we'll wait and see what the outcome of the CBA talks are. Hopefully it ends in a compromise deal that suits everybody and most importantly, allows the clubs to continue as ongoing concerns and gives the players what they need to pay their mortgages and put food on the table for their families. Let's move on and talk about the A-League awards, which were handed out this week. Alessandro Diamanti named the Johnny Warren medalist. I certainly have no problem with that. I'm not sure whether you guys do. The interesting one for me, Eric Monbert, coach of the year. Tell me something. Steve Clark,
yeah, you're not happy with that, are you?
Wins the premiership, the championship. He's gone back-to-back, only the second coach after Ange Postecoglou to do so, and yet he's not coach of the year. How does that work?
Yeah, you got to say he's pretty unlucky.
Yeah, I think that's an understatement.
Go
on by your voice there, Simon. You're not happy with that. You want that rechanged, don't you?
I don't want to change, but I think obviously this comes down to the voting system and the coaches vote, you know, for each other or maybe against each other. Who knows?
Yes.
But I do think if you win the double, I mean, what more can he do?
I agree with you, Simon. I think Steve Corica, for what he's done for not only this season, but you touched on the last 2 seasons, to win the double this year and not be named coach of the year. Very, very harsh on Stephen Corica. For me, he was a coach of the year.
Yeah, all three of us agree, and that's why Bimby didn't win.
and that's to take nothing away from Eric Mombe, who did a terrific job with Melbourne.
Great job.
And, of course, is now headed back to France with Paddy Kisnorbo taking over. We wish him all the very best. And honourable shout-out as well to Ufuk Talo. I thought had a terrific campaign with Wellington Phoenix. Talking of coaches, guys, Carl Veit, not officially over the line yet as Adelaide United's new head coach, but it looks as though it's going to happen in the next few days, which is probably a no-brainer. Riley McGree looks as though he wants to head overseas. Is that the right move for him at this stage of his career?
Where's he going, Zanthi?
Don't know. You won't put in a bid, Spider.
I think. But again, how does this play out, Spides? This is the thing. With this uncertainty, Adelaide will be desperate to obviously, if Riley McGree is going to move on overseas, but they want to be rewarded in terms of a transfer fee. So, look, if Adelaide United get the right offer, Riley McGree is on his way. That's pretty clear. Unofficially, we mentioned Carl Veit a few weeks ago in terms of the Adelaide United job. So, look, it'll be interesting. Like I said, Riley McGree is a great player for Adelaide United, but the business of football, it would make a lot of sense to sell him if they get the right offer.
Yeah, I think the problem with Riley could be more in the transfer fee, because I think unofficially, I think Adelaide has something like $1 million that they want for Riley, and I think this is going to be the hardest thing for players. Whatever happens today, tomorrow with the CBA, this is going to be the hardest thing for these players to get out. And I think the clubs in Australia, whichever situation it is, are probably better off working out a situation to let the boys go overseas and play. I think Riley McGree is ready to go overseas. I think he's a very good player. I think placed in the right league, I think in 2-3 years he can make some serious money for the club that gets a hold of him. And Adelaide, in all fairness, will probably make more money, Maury, if they sell him from Europe than they will from Australia.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right, Spides. I actually think that, that sell-on is obviously hopefully a great opportunity for Adelaide United. But I believe that Riley McGree is a player that actually could fetch $1 million. And hopefully so, because that's what we want to happen in Australia, Spides. That's the part that's been missing and that money coming back into the game. So hopefully...
In this situation, I'm not sure, Maury. That's the only thing. In this situation, where we're at now, COVID, you know, I can tell you firsthand, guys, clubs over here aren't basking in the sunshine.
Yeah.
They're actually just making it work. Mm.
It's a tough situation for everybody, not least for A-League clubs. With the uncertainty over this CBA deal, a lot of our better talents are starting to move overseas. Riley McGree certainly might be one, although he remains here for the time being. Sam Silveira of the Mariners has gone to Paços de Ferreira in Portugal. Mitch Duke and Dimi Petratos have gone off to Saudi Arabia. I guess the fear is if, as rumoured, the salary cap comes down to just over $2 million, that our better talents will all go overseas. What does that then do, Spider, to the quality of the A-League next season at a time when the league and the game in particular needs to be attracting a new broadcast partner and better investment in terms of sponsors ahead of the culmination of the Fox deal next year?
Yeah. Look, Simon, it really is scary. Look, players will always be there. That's guaranteed. Opportunities, hopefully, for players that haven't had the opportunity, they will get that. But we will be able to draw players like Diamante, and look how good Diamante has been in a very difficult year for everyone. He's been the light at the end of the tunnel. He's been fantastic. You know, Del Piero, when he came, was, you know, lifted the league. Is it going to happen this year? Look, it's difficult, but I do think maybe it's better that we have a season where we do actually come back a little bit to fix the situation off the park, and then we can actually draw the big players back.
Some of the other moves that have eventuated this last week, Aidan O'Neill has gone to Melbourne City. No surprises there after leaving Brisbane Roar. Marco Tilio and reportedly Taras Gmulka going to City as well. This is their template, isn't it, I guess, following on from the likes of Daniel Arzani and Rami Nazarene. They sort of scout around for the best local talents, even though Nathaniel Atkinson has gone the other way. He's gone out to Perth. They polish the rough diamonds and sell them on for money if they're good enough, Maury.
Yeah, and that's their business plan, and it's a very successful business plan, not only working here, but obviously overseas. You look at clubs like Brentford. I think they sold Ollie Watkins for $30 million. So look, that's their business model, and City will always look to engage and get the best younger players. And as you say, you know, try to give them that extra bit of development and game time, and hopefully sell these players, which, you know, is a benefit for all parties. It's a benefit for Australian football because they go to the next level. Melbourne City make their money.
At the other end of the spectrum, of course, some of the foreigners that came in last year, Midgeon Basher has returned to Europe. That means that all Victory's foreigners from the start of last season, Basher, Ola Toivonen, Kiki Dobras, Jakob Poulsen and Tim Hoogland have all gone, which I guess tells its own story. You have to get your imports right in the A-League if you're going to succeed. Wellington Phoenix players exited their quarantine bubble this week, 80 days after entering into it in Australia. Wow. And they've lost Callum McCowart to Helsingør in Denmark. Gary Hooper's gone to India. And, of course, Libby Kakache has gone to Belgium. So another rebuilding job, I guess, for Ufi Tale, Spider.
Yeah, but again, as I said, Simon, you know, you lose some players and other ones get the opportunity. And that's everywhere around the world. And if you have a look at the modern day game, a lot of the players that go to play in the Premier League or, you know, in Serie A in Spain, every year they change. There's two or three new players and you go, oh, who's this kid or where did he come from? Like Bayern Munich's the same, and that's a massive club, but they are always changing players. So that's a part of the game he has. And if clubs are smart and they use it to sell off players, younger players like the Leipzig, sell off the Werners that go to Chelsea and make their big money and know where they are in the pool, that's fantastic.
Maury, I want to ask you about an interesting signing for Oldham Athletic, now, of course, managed by Harry Kewell. They've signed George Blackwood from Adelaide United. A big chance for George there, even though it's lower leagues in England. Has he got what it takes to play in that particular style of competition and kick on from there?
Yeah, I think he has. I mean, look, George, he's come and showed bits and pieces of what he can do here in the A-League. We know he's a big lad. The physicality is something that he will need to improve upon. But for a big fella, he's got good feet. He has the ability to go either side. And, you know, I've seen his quotes. To be able to work under one of his idols in Harry Kewell, I think, is a wonderful opportunity. I know that H didn't get off to the winning start he wanted over the weekend, but great opportunity for Georgie Blackwood. And I actually think he can step up to the mark.
In terms go on, Spider.
No, I've always been a fan of George Blackwood's, even when I had him as a kid at Sydney FC. And again, we've always spoke about it. It's about opportunities. Now, he's been in the A-League for a while. Has he been a standard first 11 player? No, not everywhere. But has he been an impact player? Yes. And here in Europe, to be fair, a lot of clubs, they sign players and they say, well, this guy can be an impact player. I use him as an impact player. But I think Division 2 under Harry, I think it's a great stepping stone. And you know what? Guys, he wasn't going to play now for the next 6 months anyway in Australia. So if it doesn't work, he can always come back to Australia.
We wish him all the very best with his move to England. Talking of England, our female players are going pretty well. Sam Kerr is finally getting amongst the goals for Chelsea. She had a bit of stick from the press over there for not being among the goals. Caitlin Ford was also on target for Arsenal in a 9-1 win against West Ham, for whom Mackenzie Arnold. Spider, I want to ask you about this one. As a goalkeeper, if you cop 9 in a game, I don't know whether that ever happened to you, that's got to affect your confidence, whether you're at fault for those goals or not.
Yeah, the worst part is, Simon, you're going home, you're going, yep, I'm getting dropped next week, 100%. Yeah, it's not good, is it? But it can happen, and clearly it has happened.
Okay, final one on this particular segment. The Asian Champions League is resuming this week in the West, in the hub in Qatar. Already, Al Wada of the UAE have pulled out due to 5 positive COVID tests. Another 5 from Al Hilal and 1 from Al Duhail of Qatar. All a little bit precarious over there in the West. And there's also an interesting press release that went out this week with regards to Sydney FC's group and those involving Perth and Melbourne Victory as well. The AFC put out a press release saying that the games have been pushed back to November. We knew that, but there was no mention of a venue. Now, I'm told that the Malaysian government at the moment, it was, of course, slated to be in Malaysia, this group. The Malaysian government is not allowing anybody in or out of that country at the moment. How on earth do they solve this and get this competition finished? Because we're still at the group stage and normally it finishes in December. How on earth do they do it?
A big ask to see, I think, this ACL even completed. I spoke with Melbourne Victory recently, and it's still that uncertainty, Simon, again. So it's been pushed back to November, no venue or destination still in place. So, yeah, it's really looking as if it's going to be a challenge for this ACL to even be completed this year.
Yeah, that just sums up how big the continent is and how difficult. Like, when you concentrate on one country, you can sort of protect yourself in that little bubble. But when you actually start flying around everywhere and you've got teams coming from all over the world, it makes it very difficult. I don't think they'll complete it unless they do a one-off format like the Champions League did.
Which was a great success, let's be honest. They're talking about revisiting that kind of scenario.
Yep.
We shall see whether they get it done or not. I guess there's a lot of financial implications in terms of sponsors, advertisers, TV revenue, etc. If they don't, but certainly seems like a tough ask to get it done before the end of the year. All right, let's get overseas, shall we? London calling.
London calling.
Yep, London calling indeed, and it was in the English capital that the Premier League resumed over the weekend with Arsenal defeating Fulham by 3-0. Other results, Liverpool edging out Leeds in a 7-goal thriller at Anfield, Crystal Palace edging out Southampton by the only goal, West Ham 0, Newcastle 2, West Brom 0, Leicester 3, and Everton winning at White Hart Lane. Guys, let's start with that Liverpool-Leeds game. Wow. I mean, we remember years ago the classic 4-3 that ended up in Leeds' favour. But if anything, this game was even better and showed Spider that Leeds, I reckon, are going to have an interesting season under Marcelo Bielsa.
Hasn't it been fantastic with all the hype they've been getting that Bielsa's going to do this and Bielsa's going to do that? And he come out and he really did stamp his mark on the Premier League. It was a fantastic match, seesawing effort. The players from Leeds would have lost no confidence at all losing that match. And you know what? They're going to have a fantastic season and they're going to be very enjoyable to watch.
Maury, in terms of Liverpool, are you concerned by their lack of activity in the transfer market and the fact that they seemed a little bit vulnerable defensively, particularly, strangely enough, Virgil van Dijk?
Yeah, he took a little bit of flack, didn't he, over the weekend, especially for the, I think it was the second goal, being a little bit casual was a shout over there. But also Trent Alexander-Arnold probably struggled a little bit. But look, the season's just started. Defensively, Liverpool will be fine. In terms of recruitment-wise, Simon, I love stability and the odd player or two coming in. So, I don't see Liverpool are not great in terms of defensively, and they still won against Leeds United, who I agree with Spider. I think Leeds United will be, decent this season. I think that they're not going to go down. I think they'll be a good mid-table team and play entertaining football.
Spider, what about Arsenal? Big win over Fulham. Okay, Fulham are expected to struggle this season, but their new boys, Gabriel and Willian in particular, did very, very well. And their sort of stock continues to grow under Mikel Arteta. Are they a good chance not only of top four, but maybe even a little bit higher this season?
Yeah, we spoke about them a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? They seem to be copping some flack for not spending money either, but they were good on the weekend. And I agree with you. Fulham were probably poor and will struggle, as will the other two teams. I think Leeds will survive. I think West Brom will go straight back down like they do, up and down. And I think Fulham will do that. But Arsenal were class. They were actually really good. He's got them firing. They didn't have a long break after they finished last year off. They've come back, started off on fire. Good brand of football. New players come in, done really well. Good side. Top four, I would say. I don't think they can push the top two to win it. Even Chelsea's a chance, I think, this year to win it.
We'll talk about Chelsea and Man City and Man United in just a moment because, of course, they didn't play on the opening weekend of the season. Maury, I wanted your view on Everton, who defeated Spurs by the only goal at White Hart Lane. They've made some interesting investments during the off-season. Carlo Ancelotti has been quite active. They brought in James Rodriguez and Allan, the defensive midfielder from Napoli, as well. Could they be a team that's going to do perhaps what Wolves or Leicester or you know, one or two others have done in recent seasons, Sheffield United, and really sort of push for that that top six?
Look, I don't think that. I mean, of course, for Everton, they'll be looking to push top six. I still, even with the recruitment made and getting off to a winning start away to Spurs, I can't see Everton pushing into to the top six. But I think that they'll be a good side this season. They'll be hard to break down. Ancelotti's a fantastic manager, has his team playing a good way of football to get football results. Can't see him making a dint to the top six, though.
Any concerns over Tottenham, Spider?
Oh, far out. He's got a huge year, far out. You know, I watched that game yesterday with real interest, you know, because obviously Ancelotti and what he's done and how he's recruited. And Mourinho, I like Mourinho. He gives me value. So I actually do entertainment. Like watching him. Yeah, I do like watching his teams, but far out. They look like they're going to struggle again. Mm. They really do.
In terms of the other teams that didn't play over the weekend, Manchester City, of course, were very strongly linked with Leo Messi during the off-season. It didn't happen. They did get Ferran Torres. They got Nathan Ake as well from Bournemouth. Do they need one more central defender? There's a lot of talk about Kalidou Koulibaly from Napoli. Is that what they need to take the title away from Liverpool?
I think, Simon, you know better than anybody. That's exactly what they need. You know, Ake is a decent player, but a player of the presence and experience of a Koulibaly, I think, would be enormous for Man City. I still believe they definitely need to strengthen there.
Spider, Chelsea.
Simon, mate, you, what's your say on Man City? Come on, buds. Let us know. I can see you sitting there, mate. You're plugging away. You want to say something. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they need Koulibaly, to be honest. I think that's one of the things that they're missing. Otherwise, I wouldn't have brought it up. I mean, Messi would have been lovely, let's be honest. But I think that's that would have catapulted not only City, but the Premier League into the stratosphere had he come to England. He still might, of course, over the next 12 months. Be interesting to see how that January transfer window plays out. I saw that he did suit up for the first time since the big row for a pre-season friendly for Barcelona. Is he happy? Not sure. So the next 6 months are going to be very interesting with regards to Leo Messi. Spider, I want to ask you about Chelsea. They've been the big spenders of the Premier League over the closed season. Timo Werner's come in, Kai Havertz, Ben Chilwell, Thiago Silva on a free transfer, Hakim Ziyech. Frank Lampard going a different way. Of course, they had the transfer ban last year, so he had to go with the youngsters. Now that those kids have had 12 months in the first team, how does he blend those new big stars in together with the youngsters? And could they be Liverpool and Man City's big challenges?
I'm a big fan of Lampard's. I think he's done a great job the way his coaching career has started. I think they've got double competition this year as well, so he's going to need all those players. And you know what, Simon? If you can afford it, and they're not ridiculous amounts of money. Yes, it's a lot of money, but for a Premier League giant like Chelsea, it's not ridiculous money, and they're going to need those players over both competitions if they're going to compete.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
With Liverpool and Man City. So I think they're a big threat. I think they'll be in the hunt for a long, long way.
Maury, Manchester United, they signed Donny van de Beek from Ajax. Harry Maguire, of course, had a very interesting off-season, but he's retained the captaincy just about. How do you see them going this season? They're sort of a season of progress, I guess, under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer last year. Can they continue that this season?
Look, yeah, I mean, there's been some recent news, obviously, with Greenwood in terms of the stuff with England and some happy gas. So not great headlines for Manchester United. But I actually believe that they will have a good season. Donny van de Beek would be a great signing. The goalkeeping situation, Spider might like to add on that. You know, De Gea needs to be better and more consistent. If he is, Man United, we're still kind of saying didn't have a great season last year, or the perception was they didn't do great. They finished third. You know, so it wasn't too bad. And I think Ole's actually building something quite nice again at Manchester United.
What about that goalkeeping situation, Spider? David De Gea, or does he go with Darius Henderson, who had a great season on loan at Sheffield United last year?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. There was a lot of talk of Kasper Schmeichel going there in the off season, wasn't there?
Yep.
And I don't know what eventuated there and why that didn't happen. But look, let's be honest, man. We're talking about De Gea. Like, he's actually a very, very good keeper. So, I mean, he didn't have a great year last year. Okay, that can happen. But he's still a very, very good keeper. So I think with a little bit more pressure, I think he'll get the nod. He'll start the season. And then it's up to him. And I agree with Maury. I think Man United last year copped a lot of flack for actually finishing third in the competition. They're a good side. They were young. They were mobile. But the players got more experience. And they're a threat this year as well. Do I think they can finish ahead of Liverpool and Man City? No. But will they make a big... big difference in the league to see who wins it? I think yes.
Okay, before we close this segment, guys, I want one word answers or one team answers, or three in terms of the relegation battle. Who are your champions this season, and who are the three to go down? Maury.
Champions for me are Liverpool. I think they'll go back to back. Relegation, I believe the three teams that will go down will be Fulham. I think Aston Villa can go down. And I also think Brighton are going to struggle this year.
Spider.
I think Man City will win it. You're happy with that, aren't you, buds? You like that one. You like that one. I can see the smirk. You like that one. I think they'll bounce back. I just think they were beaten by a fantastic team last year. My only concern, I still think Liverpool's a fantastic side. My only concern is that all the success they had last year, can the players lift that 2 or 3, 4% that they need to go back to back? So I think Man City will be hungry. I think they'll win it. I think Fulham will go back down. I think West Brom will go back down. And I think the other one will be between Brighton and, you know what, West Ham. Poor at the moment. Poor. I think they'll struggle.
Yeah, I was going to go with those three as well. Fulham, West Brom, and potentially West Ham for me, unless they sort things out. And in terms of the title, got to be City, isn't it?
Yes.
On, I can't see City winning it, guys. I cannot see City winning the league this year.
We shall see who is correct come May, or is it maybe even June next year? Who knows in this strange COVID time? Thanks, guys, for the moment. Let's move on to our final segment of the week. And this week, it's a big one in Footballers' Lives.
Footballers' Lives.
Well, our guest this week probably holds the most important position in football in this country. Born in Sydney in 1963, he started his playing career in the NSL with Sydney United before heading overseas to play for Roda Kerkrade in Holland. He had further spells with Liège and Charleroi in Belgium, with NAC Breda back in Holland, with Sanfrecce Hiroshima in Japan, and then finally with Northern Spirit back here in Australia. As a coach, after cutting his teeth at two of his former clubs, he spent many years as Frank Farina's number two with the Socceroos. Then after an interim spell in charge of the national team, he reverted to being number two under Pim Verbeek. Finally, he got his chance as a number one with the Central Coast Mariners, where he led them to their first and so far only A-League title. And then after a short stint in Japan with Vegalta Sendai, he got the job at Sydney FC, winning another title in 2017, before returning to the national team job, this time on a full-time basis in 2018. It's a real pleasure to welcome Graham Arnold to the podcast. Good to see you, Arnie. How are you?
Mate, I forgot about all that. Did that really happen?
We're going to go through it in detail, I tell you. But before we do, now I know you've just been on a little break away with your wife, Sarah. Now tell us the funny story that happened whilst you were on your little break. You got mistaken for somebody else.
No, look, I thought I'd get away for the weekend and, you know, I know I've, you know, without coaching you, you know, people forget who you are quickly. And so I thought I'd grow a beard and go away where no one had recognised me. I went up to Hawk's Nest, went to the bar to get a beer. The guy's looking at me. He goes, "I know that face." He says, and I said, "Oh, yeah?" And I said, "Where from?" He goes, "Let me get back to you." I said, "Okay, no problem." And I'm standing there waiting for my beer. And he goes, "You're Wally Masseur." And I went, "Oh no." I said, "That's why I grew a beard, so no one would recognize who I was." And he goes, "Mate, I said, "Listen, don't tell anyone, will you? Right? Don't tell anyone, please. I'm here for a quiet weekend." He says, "Yeah, no problem." 3 days I was Wally Masseur.
And he was asking you about Paul McNamara McNamee and all the other
players. He says, "What were those twins, the doubles couple, that were great in those days?" I said, "Oh, Peter McNamara and Paul McNamee." "Oh, yeah, they were great. What were they like as players?" "Oh, mate, champions. Great guys." And then he says, "What was that Pat Cash like?" I said, "Oh, he's a bit of a twat." And "Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, do you still hit the ball?" "Oh, yeah." I said, "If they hit it straight at me, I can't run. But I hit the ball back. Oh, brilliant.
Absolutely.
You could have a laugh.
Well, I suppose it is easy to forget football coaches at the moment, particularly national team coaches, aren't they? So how are you filling your time at the moment without international matches?
Yeah, there's two ways of looking at it. It can be a tough time and a lonely time, or it can be half time. You know, I've probably had 13 years of coaching, as you said, since 2007 to 2020, we're coaching full on. And, you know, when you coach, it is full on. You don't get a day off nearly the whole time. And at the moment, obviously with no football in place, I'm using this like a halftime of my coaching career. And after this, the coronavirus is over. Pandemic is done and a vaccine is brought forward and we get international football back on the field. Well, then I'm getting ready for the second half, the next 13 years.
Is it a frustration at the moment that I know, for example, last week New Zealand announced that they're going to play an international against England at Wembley, and yet there's no dates set in stone yet for the Socceroos as to what you're going to do?
Yeah, but look, you've got to look at also that you know, New Zealand in Oceania didn't have anything in that window anyway, so they could prepare maybe 6 to 10 months ago, where we had World Cup qualifiers that were meant to be played in November, so they've been obviously lately delayed. So therefore, it's tougher to get any type of European nation because most of them are playing in the Nations Cup and they've got games. But look, we're reaching out to other member federations, CONCACAF, CONMEBOL, to see what they're doing, if their World Cup qualifiers are still on. And, you know, there is a strong feeling that and a good appetite to have a couple of friendlies in November.
Okay. In terms of the other stuff that you're doing around the FFA, I know you're helping James Johnson quite a bit, trying to put in place certain strategies, programs. You're throwing around ideas to try and reboot the game, because we all know that it's, you know, in a little bit of trouble at the moment. Can you give us any insight into what all that's about?
Yeah, look, like everyone else, you know, I took a pay cut, 50% pay cut when the coronavirus came.
So only $3 million
on board.
A year now.
Huh?
Only $3 million a year.
Oh yeah, as if. And you know, just with my appetite and passion for the game here in Australia, I said to James I would go away and with my analyst do a document, and it's only stats and data. It's no opinion based, no recommendations, and really have a look at where we're at as a game, but why we're not producing talent anymore. And you know, I hate to compare generations and those type of things, but look at why in a semi-professional world of the old NSL, did we produce these wonderful players? And why in a professional world of the A-League are we not doing the same? And, you know, we've come up with a 22-page summary of it, and it will be on. It'll be available online on the FFA social media website. That will give people a real good look into, again, why we're not doing that. And it's all based, a lot of it's based around some major decisions that were made in the game years ago. And I can rattle off a few. For example, in 2003, the old NSL stopped. There were 16 teams. 2005, the A-League started with 7 teams. Then the
eight.
A-League NYL.
8, but I'd guess excluding New Zealand Knights.
Yeah. I have trouble calling New Zealand. It's no problem. Okay. An Australian-based team because at the end of the day, you know, I only can select Australian players to play for national teams. So 7. Then you look at there was no NYL. From 2003 to 2009. 2009, the Australian Institute of Sport got shut down. 2015, the NYL went from 18 games back to 8. And then when you just look really across the whole data of match minutes and games, then we are very, very low and we need to play more football.
Arnie, I know how passionate you are in terms. I speak to you regularly about the development of younger players. So you must have been quite excited for the restart of the A-League, that these younger players were getting that exposure and opportunity, one. But secondly, now the disappointment of potentially 3 to 6 months without football development for these players.
Exactly, Maureen. I think that if there's one thing that, without being negative, looking at when the games came back after the coronavirus, was how good the young boys stepped up and represented really either their region or their state. And yeah, the crazy thing is here in Australia, it's, you know, we're doing things right across the whole nation in a different way. Each state is doing things differently. There's not a right or there's not a wrong, but we need to join together as a nation and develop and put the pathways in place to help develop the best kids. And the fact now, those kids, as you just said, they played, they did excellent. And then now they're not going to play for another 6 months. Who knows the nature of what the NYL is going to look like next year, if that's going to even be available. So for me, the NPL clubs are probably the most crucial part of the development side of the game in Australia, because Australia is so big. We've tried it the Dutch way, we've tried it the other way, and for me it hasn't worked. We now need to do it the Australian way.
I'm glad you said that about the NPL clubs, Arnie, and I think a lot of clubs out there, you know, they'll be jumping for joy to actually hear that they're important again, and you feel they're important. We've been saying on the show for a long time about a second division. They've always developed players, haven't they? Whatever it's been. I remember when I was a kid, mate, growing up and playing under you guys and, mate, getting the balls and collecting boots and learning from you guys and the experiences in the dressing rooms, that will help develop players and it will give more kids opportunity. So where do you think the second league's at, mate? How far away?
Well, that's it. That for me, Spider, that's the whole thing now. After COVID, we need to implement something straight away for the kids. I truly believe strongly that we need a second division, whatever that is, a championship or whatever. But how long is it going to take to be put in place? I believe at this moment in time, we don't have another year to waste.
Yeah.
At the moment, Spider, and you've got a son that's been through it, and you've got a son that's grown up through it, that, you know, we can, from what I believe and being told by coaches that have gone over to Europe and taken young kids away, up to the age of 16, we can compete with anybody.
Yep.
But as soon as we get to 17 and there's no football for those kids, so your son and those kids that went away to Brazil and they got in the last 16 in the world with the Joeys in the under-17 World Cup, they come back and they played 2 games of football since. How do you expect people to get great at their trade if they're not practicing their trade? And for me, the age group between 17 to 23, you know, what made me do this was I did the Olympic team and really have a deep look into Australian football was when I did the Olympic team in Thailand this year. And when you're picking kids aged between 20 and 23 to play in the under 23 tournament. So kids born from 97 to 2000. Each A-League club I was ringing about 2 to 3 players in the whole country. So when your time's at by 9, 10, you're talking about 24 to 25 players right across the whole country that were eligible for the Olympic team.
Which is your squad, basically.
Which is one squad more. And I'll tell you, I ended up taking 6 players born in 2000. It was a very young squad. And if I couldn't have got 8 or 9 players out of Europe, we would have been lucky to field a team.
Which is why Dick's very
well
qualified.
And this is the thing, Arnie, do you...
Go on, Spider.
Sorry, Simon. I was just going to say, does Arnie then think that that has to be rectified, clear as day, that has to be rectified ASAP? Because, yep. I mean, is this why kids are leaving Australia at 17, 18? Because they don't see a pathway?
Exactly. If you look at the average age of the A-League, so if you look at the average age across Holland, Belgium, Croatia, Serbia, Denmark, those type of competitions, the average age of a starting 11 that goes on the pitch is 24 years of age. The average age in the A-League is 32.
Yep.
And because the coaches aren't brave enough, are they?
The starting 11 of all the A-League teams.
Seriously?
Is 32.
Yep.
And then, I'm not saying that the kids need to play in the first team. What I'm saying is they need to play football. Yeah. And when the kids get to play 8 games a season, and then another rule that hurt us even more was the NYL was played on the same day as the A-League.
Yeah.
Some of those kids got to play 3 games, one game, the whole season.
Yeah.
You're talking about our elite kids. So for me, the whole thing needs to change. And we have to do it now because... You know, I said this morning to James Johnson. So let's picture this. At this moment, and I'm a very positive person, but I'm just saying, at this moment today, with no A-League at the moment, right? Because the A-League's finished. Normally, we'd have World Cup qualifiers September, October, November.
Yeah.
And with no A-League at this moment, and with what's overseas, on the weekend, I had 12 players. So there's 12 Australians that played this weekend over the whole world.
How many in Europe? Did you say, sorry, how many in Europe?
There was 12. Matty Ryan will make 13 tonight.
Okay.
In the whole world.
Yeah. Not good enough. Not where we need to be for a national team coach to have the opportunity to pick the strong team to be successful. But Arnie... The younger player and the development, right? So I know, like it says, the passion is there and we need to think a little bit differently. So for example, young Isaac Powell, who did play in that World Cup in November in Brazil, the Under-17 World Cup.
Yep.
Now I remember there was a time at Brisbane Roar where he travelled with the first team to Perth.
Yep.
Right? He was left out of the squad, so he sat in the stand and therefore missed a game here in Brisbane for the senior NPL side. So we've got to start sort of like backing up the talk. We talk about developing players. How do we develop players? It's by playing games. Yep. But our actions at times don't match up with our words.
Exactly. So maybe, again, for me, the most important thing is the kids playing. So maybe, Maury, what did you do in Europe in that situation? Well, when I played in Europe, we'd play Tuesday night.
Yeah.
So maybe A-League clubs, if they're in NPL, maybe if Brisbane plays Perth on the Saturday, just for 1 week out of that 40 weeks, Brisbane Roar youth team have to play Tuesday night against an NPL team to enable those kids to play rather than just not enable the kids to play.
Yeah, but that second division is all second division, reserve team, whatever you want to call it, Arnie. It's not only important for those younger players that need game time, but also you have first team players that are coming back through injury. Whereas we know in Europe, you have that opportunity to play in the second team to get your fitness to be ready for the first team.
So exactly, Maureen, I ask you the question, who's the best, probably was the best coach for you on match day playing centre back at Glasgow Rangers on match day.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Avocat was the best.
Yeah, and the experienced players around you when you were young, that helped you on the pitch?
I learned from great leaders. You know, you're talking the likes of your Richard Goffs.
Exactly.
You know, top pros.
Yeah, so exactly. So something that happens during a game in a split second, you know, and you've got an experienced player playing next to you and say, go right a bit, drop off a bit, push up a bit, you know, and is communicating on the pitch. You get the coach before the game, halftime, and during the week. But, you know, I look at Alex Wilkinson, for example. Mm-hmm. Everyone who plays next to Wilco becomes a great player mm-hmm. because of his communication, his leadership, and how he mm-hmm. helps the kids. And that's something.
Patrick Svanswijk would have been the same for you at the Mariners.
Yes.
At the Mariners, he was great.
I guess, Arnie, the issue, we all know what the problems for the game are. The problem is the solution requires investment and money. We all know that's always been the game's problem. How do we solve that issue? I know you're not the financial money, sit on the board, but the game lacks money to be able to implement some of these solutions. How do we resolve that never-ending conundrum?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, obviously money is important. And I think we have, you know, owners at the moment with a good a lot of money. And I think if you branch out to new franchises, I think there is money in Australia. And Maury's part of one now in Canberra. I think that, you know, to get more clubs is something that the sport needs in the short and long term. But just for me, again, I'm just talking about the kids and where they can play. And I just think with Australia so big that them doing that in their state will help that enormously.
Okay. We're going to just branch away from the future. We've got some Twitter questions coming up in a little while as well from our listeners. But a lot of people, certainly younger people, will probably not remember your playing career.
I can't.
well, I hope you can, because I'm going to ask you about it. You started, as we said, in Sydney United in particular.
Listen, I didn't play for Sydney United. I played for Sydney Croatia.
Okay. As they were.
That's correct, Graham.
You got to one grand final, 1988. Now, I actually had a look at this on YouTube yesterday. You lost to Marconi on penalties. The one thing that I can't believe, and the one thing that is probably better today, even though we still complain about it, the pitch looked damned awful.
That was good pitch in those days, Parramatta Stadium. That was the only one at that time that had grass.
But you lost that grand final. You went overseas in 1990 with Roda Kakrade. I think Gary Van Egmond was there with you as well at the start. You played with some great players and under some fantastic coaches down the years. I'm just going to pick a few names out of here. At Rhoda, you played with Ronald Vartarus, who I think played at Rangers. Mario Bain, Alphonse Gronendijk, who I remember at Manchester City many years later. RFC Liège, you played under Eric Heretz and then George Lakins. You played with Victor Ikpeba, Sunday Elise. Nat Brady had Tony Vidmar with you. I mean, these were terrific players, great coaches. Do you feel as though you absorbed, like a sponge, a lot of information from all those players around you, particularly from your time in Europe, not exclusively?
Yeah. Look, those times were a fantastic time because, first of all, there was no social media.
Thankfully.
You could get away with everything. No, but, you know, like the days that I went overseas, there was three foreigners per club. And a Belgian player in Holland was a foreigner. So it was pretty crazy that, you know, there was a handful of Australians that got brought over to Europe. And you know, played in those top European leagues. And I think Eddie Krencevich was one of the first ones with Dave Mitchell, Slater, Farina. And we all got, and then myself, and we all got picked up by playing with the national team and doing those tours and having clubs come out here and play against us. But, you know, the coaching was brilliant. Like, you know, it took me, I have to say, looking back on it, I probably played in a semi-pro league in Australia. I was a builder at the time and I had to go to work every day and then train at night. And my game probably went up another 50-60% of what I played here in Australia. And obviously with great players around you, but the level of competition that you play against. And so, you know, what I took out of the coaching or the Dutch methods and Dutch ways was fantastic. I had a great assistant coach, Willie van der Kolen at when I first went to Roda, and he's one of the leading goal scorers of all time in Dutch football at PSV. And just the little details that he gave me as a striker on creating and making your own space to score goals in the box was fantastic. Eric Gerrits in Belgium was his first year of coaching. He was probably the best player that we had, even though he was 40 years of age and retired at PSV. And it was funny because that year and that part of that era with Eric was when I played with Jean-Marc Bosman. The Bosman rule.
The infamous Jean-Marc
so
Bosman.
So in the old days...
You changed football.
In the old days, you had... when you were off contract, you still had a transfer price on your head.
Yeah.
Right? And Eric Gerrits was in his first year of coaching. He didn't want Jean-Marc Bosman with the team. They put 500 grand on his head that he couldn't leave. And Eric made him train with a reserve grade team.
And so that's where it all started.
Yeah, that's where it all started. And it he went, all he wanted to do, he was about 28, 29 years of age. All he wanted to do was go and play with his mates.
Yeah. Hey? Yeah, just wanted to be free and go play football.
And all he wanted to do was go play with his mates in a French third division competition. And because of that price, he couldn't do it. And that's where it all started. He fought. Yeah,
but if they would have rang up the PFA, they would have got involved and got him off.
Well, like they did for you.
In terms of your coaching career, Arnie, obviously you started, as we say, as assistant with the Socceroos under Frank Ferrander to start off with. You've had lots of highs and lows, both as a senior coach and as a number two. Just want to pick out a couple of the highlights, the Mariners title win in 2013, and then obviously your success with Sydney FC in 2017, along with the national team success as a number two in particular. What's given you the most satisfaction in terms of those ups? We'll maybe talk about one or two of the downs in a moment as well.
But the downs are the best, because it's the best learning experience you can have. Mm-hmm. The ups are great, and it gives you a reward for all the hard work that you do. I obviously, though people like to talk about Frank Ferrando, like Frank Ferrando was coach of the national team, but they don't say about what he really did well, right? He had to go through a period in a term where the ASF shut down. It was completely broke. There was no competition. And Frank Ferrando and we won a bronze medal at the Confederations Cup. We beat France and we beat Brazil 1-0 in the semi-final. And then we went to Germany and for the Confeds Cup there, and that was Frankie's last tournament. And Frankie did a great job in bringing all these guys through and giving them a lot of game time with the experience. On my side of it, the wonderful learning experience was Gus Hiddink on detail. He wasn't, and I know these boys will say, I had a great experience with him as an assistant coach because of the way that he treated me, the way he treated me.
Because you could have a cigar. You could have a cigar and a glass of red with him.
Yeah.
Well, we had to run like dogs.
Yeah. And he was, his attention to detail and everything, but then the way he managed people, I saw something completely different in that. And I tried to do that same way, and it was the biggest mistake I ever did. And that was 2007. Mm. And then I had this great man manager in Pim Verbeek. Pim was a very good coach, but was just an unbelievable human being. And and the way he man managed, it really left a lot of detail with me. And that's the type of manager that I have learnt the most out of, because it doesn't hurt to send a text to a player who's playing overseas and say, well done. It doesn't hurt to reach out to players where, because Morio, he would not even, these guys probably didn't have a conversation with him. Mm.
Ruthless.
So I saw two different aspects of coaching. And I still say, like one of the my best achievements is qualifying the Ollie Roos in 2008 for Beijing when there was no NYL competition. I had 23 players who didn't play a minute nearly the whole season. But being able to get after the, your negative one will be the 2007 Asian Cup.
I think you already touched on that, to be fair.
No, it's great. After being able to remove that and get straight back into coaching and having that bit of success with the Oli Roo boys and qualifying for Beijing is what made me go forward.
Arnie, imagine, obviously, one of your great successes you touched on there, 2008, with the lack of minutes from those players. And look how far the rest of Asia have come along in that period of time to where we sit. Now, that's the bit I think that we're all slightly uncomfortable with at the moment, eh?
Oh, Maury, it's, you know, what we've done in the past has been 10 days, acclimatization, I call it, not preparation, for junior World Cup qualifiers. You know, people want to call it AFC tournaments. Well, they double up as junior World Cup qualifiers. And 10 days preparation. And if you don't qualify, they shut the program down. And, you know, you look at the money that the Middle East countries, Japan, South Korea, and they're all putting in is untold. And we've got to get serious about it. And if get serious about it, well, then we will fight the whole way.
Just want to ask you one more, Arnie, before we move on to some Twitter questions. In terms of going back to club football, I don't know whether that's still an ambition of yours. You had a very brief spell overseas with Vegalta Sendai in Japan that didn't really work out. Is that still an ambition of yours or not?
100%. You know, no matter what people say, it was mutual agreement in Sendai. Like, they wanted me to stay on. I had 2 draws and 4 losses, but I couldn't manage the way I wanted to manage with communication, because of the I needed a translator, and to go through a translator, I couldn't read the body language of the players. I couldn't get a connection with the players, and I think that's what I try to specialize in managing is the man management side of things. And I went to the chairman after a game, and I wasn't enjoying it. And I went to the chairman after the game, and I'd said to him, "If I stay, you're getting relegated." And he said, "Why?" They wanted me to stay till at least the middle of the season. And I gave it in after 6 weeks, because I could see that the players weren't understanding what I wanted them to do. I could see they weren't. Obviously, we lost 4-0 in one game against Uara Reds. And, you know, they couldn't read what I wanted them to do. So, as I said, I went to the chairman and said, "If I stay, you'll get relegated. You'll have a sponsor crisis, a fans crisis, a player crisis. It's easier that I walk away now with a mutual agreement." I didn't take a cent. I had a 2-year deal. I didn't take a payout. I walked and left. And I felt better for them that replacing me with the assistant coach, Watanabe, would have done a better job than me. Staying.
But at some stage, you'd still like to head back.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Like, you know, the MLS attracts me a lot. Yeah. I know our salary cap system works. I know that way of it, and the cultural side of it is very similar to Australia, but I still have, you know, a lot of ambitions.
Okay. Let's ask a couple of Twitter questions from our listeners. This one from Dom, which is our question of the week. Congratulations, Dom. You win a $100 voucher for Outback Steakhouse. How do you feel about Lyndon Dyke's decision to play for Scotland?
I feel great. You know, at the end of the day, it's such a big decision. You know, these two guys here would have had would have been put in the same position where they had a chance to play, you know, for either Scotland, Australia for Maury, Croatia, Australia for Spider, but the rulings were different in those days. I had four conversations with Lyndon over the telephone. I've got text messages, probably 20 text messages. Rene Molenstein went and watched him play live. If our qualifiers didn't get called off in March against Q8 and Nepal, he was in the squad selected.
Wow.
And he had agreed already to come and play for Australia. Now, that's changed a bit with his transfer from Kilmarnock to QPR. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's such a big decision for him and his family.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to put him under pressure just to cap him, you know, for a game or 2 games just to make the media happy or the public. It's a big decision for the kids.
Sure is.
And I support him 100% with the decision he's made.
Okay. Lee Broxham Facts. As a former striker, what's something you can show off on the training pitch to the current team?
Now?
Yeah.
How to miss?
Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. How to miss?
Absolutely nothing. Let me give you the tip.
Yeah, that was a quick answer.
And this one from Scott Greenwood. How has the training methods and professionalism of Socceroos teams and camps changed between playing for and now coaching the national team?
Oh.
Chalk and cheese?
Yeah, chalk and cheese. Yeah. No, it's... yeah, look, the amount of travel, the level of the games now is so high. You know, I try to, again, drive a culture of enjoyment, a culture of pride, to play for your country. The boys give a lot of commitment to do what they do with playing abroad and travelling all the way here to Australia to play for their country. And when they go out on the pitch, I just want them to go out and enjoy doing it.
Okay. And the last one from Nick Ogle via Facebook. Your thoughts, Arnie, on the first string Socceroos being part of a big club but not getting regular playing time against playing in a weaker league but playing every week?
Yeah, look, I am for one that every, you know, when you go through life, you go up the ladder. Some players, younger players, have taken the jump from, you know, from here right to the top rung, and then, of course, they haven't played. They've had to come all the way back down. And some, their careers can be over. I think it's one step at a time.
Okay.
Your career gets better and better as you keep playing, rather than not playing at all.
Okay. And thanks for all your questions this week. And thank you to Graham Arnold for being a very, very interesting part of our podcast. Thanks for coming in, Arnie.
No, how come you've got a bit of purple there and a bit of yellow on your beard? And grey and black.
Whereas yours is all
you call me interesting.
hey, Arnie, normally on the show we ask people about their favourite ground and stuff like that, but I've just got a message from someone in Holland to say, could you ask Arnie his favourite nightclub in Kerkrade?
Now, that was...
La Diligence.
I was going to say that's 30 years ago, and I still remember La Diligence.
Apparently, there's a plaque there in your honour.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for
inviting me, Spider.
And thanks to Spider.
Thanks, Arnie. Arnie,
thanks very much, mate, for your time.
Thanks, Maury. Top man, mate.
And that is us for another week. Zoom connections notwithstanding, we're back same time, same place next week. Until then, bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.